I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's time now for Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. You can call the show now at 503-397-1600 or toll free at 877-397-1632. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KOHI, staff, management, or sponsors. Now, here's Melinda.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Setting the Record Straight. I apologize, we're a little delayed this morning. We're having technical difficulties, or Zoom is having technical difficulties. But anyway, we're here. And happy Friday, everyone. Carol and I have quite the show for you this morning. Next Renewable Fuels has made an interesting financial move, and we're going to be talking about the latest reinvention of Next with Willamette Week reporter Anthony Evinger. But first, Carol and I have some unsettling news to report for you this morning. A court filing shows that claims of sexual assault have been leveled at State Representative-elect Brian Stout. A Columbia County woman is alleging that Mr. Stout sexually assaulted and then threatened twice to kill her. She filed a request for a temporary restraining order on November 7th, the day before the election. Columbia County's newest judge, Denise Kepinger, granted the woman's request and issued a 5-year sexual assault protective order. Now, the woman claims in one instance that Mr. Stout grabbed and kissed her. She stated in court documents that he grabbed her arm so tightly that it left a noticeable bruise. In her petition for the protective order, the woman outlined 6 instances of alleged sexual abuse from June 2020 to August 2021. She also claimed in court filings that Mr. Stout threatened to shove her off a cliff and another time threatened to slit her throat. Mr. Stout is denying all allegations, saying the claims are false. In a motion to dismiss the order, he states that the allegations are based on a sham and politically motivated. Mr. Stout also claims that the allegations were filed with the court the day before the election to, quote, put verifiably false and malicious allegations in the public record one day before the election, end quote. Mr. Stout's motion to dismiss also noted that a consultant with a political action committee made a public records request for a copy of the petition, which he claims further indicates that this has simply been a political hatchet job and not an honest request for legal protection from purported sexual abuse. Mr. Stout is asking the court for a hearing to clear his name and to terminate the order. That hearing is scheduled for next Monday afternoon in Columbia County Circuit Court. And I want to clarify for our listeners that being the respondent of a protective order is not the same as being charged with a crime. At this juncture, we don't know if there is an investigation into the allegations or if the woman plans to press criminal charges. And Carol and I will be following the story, and we do expect to have more information for you next Friday. And I do want to note that the new legislative members will be inducted into the Capitol January 9th. So this is coming up. And the political operative who requested the file, her name is listed in the court filings, and according to her LinkedIn profile, she works for a Republican PAC. So there you have it. And like I said, we will be following this. So now we're going to get to what a regular scheduled guest, Anthony Evinger. Welcome, Anthony. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey there.
Hey. So
how are you?
I am great. Great. Thank you so much. And really appreciate you taking the time. So you wrote a pretty interesting story last week about Next Renewable Fuels and the plans. They're going to sell shares to the public, but they don't have any earnings and they don't have any, do they have any actual sales? So you're here to share this with Carol and I, so we understand the situation better.
My apologies for the technical difficulties here.
No worries.
In a way, it's not expected, and in a way, it is completely expected. And the reason is the founder of Next, Chris Eford, comes from a background in finance, and he is an expert in what are called reverse mergers, or they call them these days SPACs, which are what you do is you set up a company, a special purpose entity, which is just a hollow company. It has nothing but a listing on an exchange, like on the NASDAQ usually, or the New York Stock Exchange, but rarely. And what it is, it's just a company that has a ticker symbol and it has shares circulating, and it can issue more shares. And what it does is it then goes out and finds a company that actually has a business and it merges itself with that business. So what it's a way to get listed on an exchange without having to do a very complex initial public offering, which is costly and time consuming. And this is what Chris Eifert did for years before he started Next. So, you know, like I say, it was surprising. It wasn't surprising. The weird thing about this one is the operating company, Next Renewable Fuels, has no earnings, has no sales, has nothing so far but a collection of permits. And that collection of permits so far is incomplete.
Thank you. So is it fair to say that there's no there? I mean, they've worked hard and they've been, I think it's been some, what is it, Carol, like 2017, maybe 2018 when they came to the community. And it seems like there's a tremendous outlay of cash. These permits are not inexpensive. Is that correct, Anthony?
Yeah, no, they've spent a lot of money. I think it's unfair to say there's no there. You know, lots of companies will sell shares to the public without earnings. Some will do so without sales. I don't know if you remember the dot-com boom of the late 90s.
Sure.
But lots of companies then had no earnings. They had sales, usually, but they had no earnings. They were bleeding cash, but they had venture capital to back them up. So it's not crazy. It's a little unusual in this environment. And I'd say it's a little unusual in the energy industry. It seems a bit premature, you know, especially since they've got a long way to go, right? I mean, they still are not complete on permits and they don't plan to break ground. What is it, until 2024, right? They want to finish permitting in 2023. So you have to ask, you know, why are they doing this? And the other thing that's sort of puzzling to me is they told me that their banker was Goldman Sachs. Now, you know, Goldman's one of the biggest banks on Wall Street, and to have them in your corner is a coup, right? I checked in with Goldman. They wouldn't tell me whether or not Next was a client. That's not surprising. That's the way these banks operate. They're very cagey about, you know, revealing things about clients or even non-clients. But if they had Goldman in their corner, you wonder why they're doing a reverse merger into a shell when Goldman could go out and help them syndicate, sell all sorts of debt to investors, raise all kinds of money.
Okay, so can you Dick and Jane this for me?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Why would they have a merger and make a shell company? Liability? Who would be willing, I guess, to take a chance on this project? And if so, why make a shell company?
Can
you help me out here?
It's super confusing. Especially if you know you're not accustomed to this kind of stuff. And even for people in the business, it's hard. But there's two ways to raise money for your project, for a company. You can sell debt, right? You can just say, you know, here are bonds I'm gonna sell you. You give me the money now, I will pay you back later with interest. Or you can sell equity. You can sell shares in the company. And that gives you an ownership stake in the company. You normally don't get any dividends or anything like that from a startup like this, but you have equity. So if the thing does work, you have an ownership stake. And the way it works is you have to do an initial public offering once you reach a certain number of shareholders in your company. So say you got a bunch of employees, you've given them all shares in your company, it's private, blah, blah, blah. You get up to a certain number. I think it's 400. Okay, we have to sell shares to the public, so that the Securities and Exchange Commission can regulate us.
Wait, you have to? That's
yeah, once you get to a certain number of shareholders, you have to sell. You have to do an IPO because you need SEC oversight. This is sort of like, what's the way to put it? It's like you're not going to the car dealer and buying the new car. You're almost going to the used car lot, and you're saying, I'm not going to buy a new car. I'm going to get a used car, which is this shell company, and I'm going to put myself into it. And what you get is it's sort of like it's a ready-made thing. It's there. It has shares that are trading. And what that means you can do then is you can sell more shares and raise more money for your business. So these guys have a long way to go, right? They got to do a lot more work. They got to spend a lot more money on permits. They got to raise money. They could sell debt. They could sell bonds, just like, you know, anybody else. They could basically take a mortgage, right? Or they can sell equity. They can sell shares to people and get that money. And what this shell does is let them sell shares to other people. The other thing it lets them do is if you look in the filings, you'll probably find that a lot of people in the shell company got shares at a very low price early on. What happens when the price of those shares go up? Well, the early investors make money.
Okay.
That's often the case with these shells, is that the people who are in early get the shares at fractions of a penny sometimes. Now, I haven't looked closely enough at all of the filings here to find out who got what in this particular case, but that's what I would watch for. I would watch to see who got shares at a cheap rate and then look at where the shares are trading now. And here's the good news about this for somebody who's interested in this company. Now we can track them because it's public.
Okay.
You have to disclose everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you know the ticker symbol for the company and you know where to, you can just look and you can see everything they're doing because they have to file.
Okay. So, okay. That's super interesting. We are going to take a quick break.
Sure.
We come back.
Yeah.
Anthony is going to fill us in a little bit more.
Okay. I'll try.
So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is Setting the Record Straight.
Need towing? Call Grump. Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks, to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember, Grumpy's Towing, that's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533.
Hey, are you looking for an affordable family fun adventure? Then start with a visit to Family Fun RV, now open at St. Helens. If you're planning your next outdoor adventure in one of our many campsites here in Columbia County, or you're heading out on the road, Family Fun RV gets you out there with a great deal on a new or used RV. And it's 2022 year-end clearance sale time now. So, look to save big right now. Remember, our parts and service departments are here for you too, 6 days a week. Got questions? Stop in Family Fun RV on Columbia River Highway or call us at 971-803-7012 or we're on Facebook. Get out there right now with Family Fun RV, now open in St. Helens. Are you out there yet? NMLS 116407.
This is Matt McHugh from Cascadia Home Loans with a special announcement from Columbia Pacific Food Bank. Columbia Pacific needs volunteer drivers. Volunteer for a shift now. Shifts are just one day a week between 7:30 and 10:30 a.m. No CDL is required. You just need a driver's license. Go to cpfoodbank.org and click volunteer to help feed Columbia County now.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
And we're back. Maybe. Hey, we're back. Carol and I are chatting this morning with Anthony Eppinger. Anthony is a reporter with Willamette Week, and he has been extensively covering next renewable fuels and all of the stories that are around that. And as you all know, Carol is a huge advocate, an environmental advocate. And so she too has been following this story closely. So before break, we were talking with Anthony about the latest financial move by Next Renewable Fuels. And they're going to sell shares to the public. They're merging with a shell company called Industrial Tech Acquisitions Incorporated, based in Houston, naturally, as a lot of these energy places are. But okay, so who is Industrial Tech Acquisitions the second or two?
So they're a shell company that was set up by an investment bank in Texas. Let me pull up the name. You had the name there.
Industrial Tech Acquisitions.
Yeah.
Incorporated.
Yeah. And so they're set up by, so they're really, you know, they're just a company that exists, you know, as a filing, but they're set up. Hang on. I get it. The name it's Texas. I'll pull it up. But it's basically, it's an investment bank that sets up these shells. Right.
Okay.
And that's one of their lines of business. They do that. They call themselves an investment bank. It's Texas Ventures, Texas Ventures. And they do a couple of things. They do private equity investments. That's where they invest in private companies, right? And then they also do venture capital, which you're accustomed to startups and things like that. So, you know, is this a private equity investment? Is this a venture investment? Doesn't really matter. They set up this entity. They probably, you know, have some sort of ownership stake in it. Again, that'll be in the SEC filings for all the curious listeners out there. you can learn a lot about this company now because it's out there. Before Next was a little bit hard to get information about them. And now you can go to the SEC's website and learn everything you want.
So I'm curious. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
At one point, I tried to verify some of the information that the Next folks had on their website about some of their board. Mm-hmm. And I was having a hard time verifying some of it. Not that that doesn't mean that wasn't accurate. Just I couldn't find it anywhere on the internet. The members talked about being involved in certain organizations, and I couldn't find any information on that. So I'm wondering, if you're a file with the SEC, let's say SEC, if Carol and I decide to make Carol's Widgets and we have 500 employees and we're going to go public, when I say, you know, well, look at Carol, she, you know, I can't say that she's president of the United States. I mean, someone would vet that. But are they vetting what people actually put on the filings? Is somebody double checking and saying, yes, Carol really is, you know, the mayor of Beaverton or whatever it is?
Oh yeah. No.
Do they vet it?
You can try to put one over on the SEC. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, no, seriously, like
we're not going to. Carol and I are not gonna make widgets.
No, please don't. Please come on, y'all. No, it's a federal agency, right? And what you put into those filings has to be true to your...
Okay.
You know, and it has to be audited, right? If you put in financial information, it has to be audited. And you can get in a big, big trouble for faking that stuff. So, like I say, here's what you need. You just need the what's called the ticker symbol. And that's the symbol like a stock symbol. Like Intel is INTC and
sure.
Nike is NKE. This one happens to be T as in Tom, AQ, ITAC with a Q. So if you go and you put that into the SEC's website or just even type it into Google and say ITAC stock, you're gonna get a whole bunch of information that you weren't gonna get before.
Okay.
About Next, including there's an investor presentation in there that's pretty interesting, which I can send to you if you like. It talks about how they have all their permits. They have many of their permits, including a land use permit. And I don't know if you saw the news today, but the Columbia Riverkeeper is out saying, well, actually, their land use permit is in a little bit of jeopardy because LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals, said, hold on a second, we got a problem with this rail yard. You probably followed this, but...
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's in, you know, that kind of stuff is in there now.
Okay. And
yeah,
the piece of information, and Carol, you might also have, you know, some thoughts on this since you have followed this as closely as I have. The one piece I've never been able to get, I've asked, is who are their financial backers? And this, now with this merger, if somebody is indeed backing, and I don't mean just agreed to buy a product, but if they're financed, if they, somebody has to finance it, what is the project now? Is it, Carol, is it $2.5 billion, $3 billion? What is it? You're on mute.
I can tell you.
There you go. Yeah. How much is it now?
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm not sure. I mean, it changes daily.
That's right. So in the SEC filings, they talk about $3.5 billion. But when you talk to, you know, I think the last time I talked to the company, I mean, they were talking upwards of five. So, you know, there's different ways to account for that, I'm sure. So we give them some, let's give them some wiggle room. But these numbers are, that's a big span, right? So that's another thing. So now they've got to really put the, you know, put it down on paper. what they're doing.
Because $1 billion is an $1 billion is an incredible amount of money. So much more money than $1 million, right? Cool. I mean, but now it's now crept up to somewhere between 3.5 to 5. And I know you're not a forensic scientist or a forensic auditor, but I'm going to ask you this question anyway. Have you done any kind of the math? I mean, you have a background in financial reporting. Is there any way you could see that this would be a moneymaker for them? How long would it take to pay off $3.5 billion? That doesn't, that's just the building. That's not even like paying people.
Yeah, you'd have to know a lot about, you know, that depends on the price of renewable diesel, how much they can actually make, how much their inputs are going to cost. And those are all just huge variables. Right. And here's the thing. I mean, you probably know this, but what I keep hearing from people about this project is the challenge is getting the inputs, getting the raw materials.
Sure.
What are you going to make this stuff out of? Right. There's a scramble on right now for this stuff. Everybody wants it because Oregon and California pay you to make this stuff, you know, right. Because they're trying to incent the use of renewable fuels. Right. So there's money out there for this. The problem is there's not enough restaurant grease, used cooking oil, fish guts, seed oil coming from the Midwest, right? You don't, that's the last thing you want to do is like start importing virgin soybean oil because that, you know, that's not as good, right?
Or palm oil.
And palm oil's out, right? Right. So, but they're talking about a huge project that's going to suck up all this raw material, and where are they going to get it?
Well, exactly. And
I talked to
a farmer who was telling me that a lot of land that was used for hay is now used for hemp, but it's another issue. And Carol, how much did you just pay for hay?
$600 for a ton.
Okay, that's so outrageous. So
what's that? How's that compare to?
It was $275 a year ago.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So if you have livestock, if you have horses, donkeys, whatever, and you're a farmer, and there's still other industries out there that are using the ground, and animals have to eat. But if you're using that in the Midwest, if they're going to be switching over, you know, if they're going to be planting more corn, right, for feedstock, then what are the animals get? I just think is anybody like keeping an eye on this at the federal level? Because I could see, yeah, Carol.
I just wanted to throw a little background stuff in here because when NeXT first came to Columbia County, Melinda, who's the onboard researcher, did a lot of research and I helped her, and we came up with the history of what they had been as a company in the past. And they rent a mailbox at a place that just rents mailboxes to businesses, and that's their business address. And they would get them something and then it would go away and they would change their name and change the number on the mailbox and come back as something else. And I don't know, remember exactly how many times, but it was quite a few times that they had already done this in the past. And they didn't seem to be serious about actually starting the thing they said they were going to start, except the one time when they did try to do a renewable diesel and it failed. But we took that to the county commissioners, and I will say that it mostly was different people than now. And they said, we don't have to read this stuff because we trust our leader. And that's a scary thing because Riverkeeper had done similar research and we'd all looked at it and said, this doesn't look like a company that's really going to do what they say. And many of us are still believing that they have no intent of actually really starting the thing. They're just going through the motion to get investments, like we're talking about what's happening right now. And I just feel, I mean, it's so frustrating for those of us who follow this very carefully, listen to them, think that they're telling us the truth. And I mean, the number one thing they sold us on, this is back in the quite a ways, we will not be using trains, because the community at that time was very up in arms about the shipment of oil on the trains and how dangerous it was to the community. And they said, we will not use them at all. And then their initial plan comes out, and it's got a 400 car railroad side thing. And even one of the commissioners said, wait a minute, that means trains. And they said, we'll only do it if the river stops working, which we're all concerned about that. And their knowledge of how rivers work. But I feel like we're being very led down the garden path, and it doesn't seem to be really what's happening. I mean, they're making statements now and putting ads out locally saying, we've got all our permits, we won all the love of the people of the county. And it's not true. And
where are you seeing those ads? I'd be very curious about those.
On this radio station. But on that note, we have to take a quick break. So you might hear the ad right now. So stay with us. This is Setting the Record Straight. We'll be right back with more with Anthony Effinger. So stay with us.
Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember Grumpy's Towing. That's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533.
Hey, are you looking for an affordable family fun adventure? Then start with a visit to Family Fun RV, now open at St. Helens. If you're planning your next outdoor adventure in one of our many campsites here in Columbia County, or you're heading out on the road, Family Fun RV gets you out there with a great deal on a new or used RV. And it's 2022 year-end clearance sale time now, so look to save big right now. Remember, our parts and service departments are here for you too, 6 days a week. Got questions? Stop in Family Fun RV on Columbia River Highway, or call us at 971-803-7012, or we're on Facebook. Get out there right now with Family Fun RV, now open in St. Helens. Are you out there yet? NMLS 116407.
This is Matt McHugh from Cascadia Home Loans with a special announcement from Columbia Pacific Food Bank. Columbia Pacific needs volunteer drivers. Volunteer for a shift now. Shifts are just one day a week between 7:30 and 10:30 a.m. No CDL is required. You just need a driver's license. Go to cpfoodbank.org and click volunteer to help feed Columbia County now.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Why don't you just meet me?
And we're back. Carol and I are chatting this morning with Anthony Effinger. Anthony is a reporter with Willamette Week, and hi.
Why don't you just meet me? Oh, take a step.
In the community. And Anthony. Us have, and that is, he was a financial reporter for quite a while, and he really understands pretty much in depth like the filing situation and how NeXT is financing its efforts to build a biodiesel refinery here in Columbia County. And the latest, if you haven't been following, is that they are going to merge with a shell company. So the upside for them is that they're probably going to get more investors, but also it's going to open them up to some more scrutiny. So we're going to really see who's involved. And I guess we can like play at home, play along at home a lot easier when we have the whole picture. So thank you, Anthony, again for joining Carol and I. We were talking about their plans, and I have an old brochure here in my office from like originally, I think 2019. And I think the cost has gone up. Now, to be fair, the world's changed quite a bit since they started this project. COVID, we're seeing outrageous prices for everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that may have also, to be fair, that could have led to the number increasing. What was the latest number that you have found that they said it was going to, the price would be?
I'd have to look. You'd have to look in the, let me see what they said in the filing. Like I said, they put an investor presentation into their new filings. Let me see if I can get it quickly. No, that's not it. I'll have to come back. The number they gave us early on was 2.5. I feel like I saw 3.5 someplace, but I mean, actually at any price, this is a big, big project. It's huge. It's something that a large oil company would have trouble doing. And the question is, you've got a group of people who have some experience, but I don't see that they have the experience building something this large. And I actually went to them when I was doing my story and I said, give me an example of something that Chris Eford, the CEO, has built that is like this, right? Which I figured was a fair question.
Excellent question.
And look, he's a really nice guy. He's earnest. They answered all my questions. They have not dodged a single question. You know what I mean? They're not hiding none of that. But on this one, they said, you know, this is not just one guy. It's a group effort.
Okay.
So, okay.
Who's the group?
Well, the group is, you know, this board, and there appear to be a couple people on there who have some experience with chemical engineering, but you know, as you said, it's not a BP. They have BP, they say, as a supplier of feedstock, and that's great.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
Don't they have, who's supplying their feedstock, BP or Shell?
Well, I thought Shell, I thought Shell was going to buy the end product. Are you telling me oil companies own feedstock lots?
Yeah. I have to check this, but I believe that BP is their, BP is supplying feedstock for them, including, I'm not sure it's including, but you know, one of the things they promised was that they were going to use fish paste.
Where are you going to get that much fish?
Well, Asia, a lot of, you know, the catfish processing plants produce a lot of waste. That's where a lot of this is supposed to come from. Mm-hmm. From my reporting, there hasn't been a lot of fish paste used to make renewable diesel yet. Okay so that's going to be new.
That's emerging technology.
There is a plant, you're probably familiar with Neste, the Finnish company that makes renewable diesel. They apparently have a plant in Singapore, I'm told, that is the size of a small city. And it can make renewable diesel, somebody told me the other day, out of sewage.
Wow.
They can make it out of anything.
That's impressive.
Right? But Neste is this giant Finnish company, right? Fuel company. And they have a lot of experience with this. So.
Okay. So, all right. So I mean that the technology, like we've talked about, the emerging technology is really impressive, but they talk specifically, at least at the time in this brochure that I have from 2019, that they were going to use Honeywell technology. And that, I believe, at the time, a refinery in Anacortes and a couple in Louisiana had retooled an existing refinery and used that technology, right? And that's where you get using feedstock or oils. So it feels like, and there's a massive plant somewhere in India as well. Mm. It feels like there's a lot of movement and exciting opportunities here to do that. But once again, $3.5 billion, this is not a government project. And like you said, it would be a heavy lift for an oil company. Like, and these oil companies are, you know, massive. So while I applaud Mr. Eford for, you know, trying to get on the ground floor here, it feels like they're sort of behind the curve. And, you know, And it's not just the technology, I think, that has local people, I know, has local people concerned. It is that it's, they're trying to build it in a subduction zone on soils that are shifting and in some areas like 7 feet above the water table. There's just like infrastructure questions that I have that I feel like have never been addressed. Like, what are you going to do for, how are you going to build a sewage plant? Like just basic, really not exciting details. How are you going to provide water? All of that for your workers and where, you know, there's just too many answers. So, or questions, I should say. So it's interesting. So let's talk really quickly about this merger, because it seems like the person who's in charge, you wrote in your article of November 28th. And if you do want more information, be sure and check out Anthony's article in Willamette Week. It was posted November 28th. That this shell company is run by this gentleman. I'm looking for it right now.
Texas Ventures.
Right. And it's led by Scott Crist. Yeah. So it's interesting because his other company is Osperity, which is an AI computer vision for the industrial sector. It's tech. So how do you think that tech and energy are dovetailing here? Isn't that an interesting juxtaposition of portfolio?
Well, so this is what jumped out at me, and I it could be, you know, nothing, but it jumped out at me. I put it in the story. It says in a filing with the SEC, Tech Acquisitions 2, which is the shell, and this is before they did the next deal, right? This is when the thing was set up. It said it will focus its search on companies in, quote, technology-focused areas, including software, mobile, and IoT applications. IoT is Internet of Things, like putting sensors on goods, right? Digital and energy transformation, cloud and cyber communications, as well as high bandwidth services, including LTE, remote sensing, and 5G communications.
Okay.
In there, they do say energy transformation, but it is one item in amid a lot of tech. And I was surprised that this, you know, that they chose this instead of all these other tech things. So that was a little surprising. You know what I mean? It seems like, wait, they pivoted a little bit, right?
Well, right. And I was just wondering, and you never, I mean, maybe it's they know each other personally, or, but it just seems like an odd, don't you think, Carol, that it seems like an odd when you have tech to go to energy. It doesn't seem like a natural transition, but I don't know. I guess that's what they're interested in. So has the filing actually happened, Anthony, or is this coming?
The filings meant saying their intent to do this has happened. They said they're going to complete the merger in the middle of next year.
Oh,
so they won't be public until mid